Coming up on this episode of the Retirement Power Play podcast, we're talking about taking some small steps to get some big wins out of that, right? So not everything you have to do is going to knock it out of the park, right? It's not going to score a power play goal necessarily. It's the little things that add up to the goals over time. So today we're going to unpack some of that, some of the small steps that you can take and add to your financial life that hopefully will have a big positive impact over time.
When it comes to your finances, you don't want to be at a disadvantage. Tim Dyer can help. He's a wealth manager specializing in retirement planning and investment management, and he can be that financial coach that helps you achieve your goals in retirement. This is Retirement Power Play.
Welcome into the Retirement Power Play podcast. We've got a good show, and Tim, it's perfect because you're Bruins. Another year, another incredible start. Only one loss out of the gates here as we close out November.
Yeah, it's been absolutely been a great start. 12-1-2, and after a great season with a failed playoff run, the expectations are a little lower as our captain and our star player retired, along with David Krejci, another star player. I bring it up because when we think about last year, we were getting easy wins. We had a great team. We had the best schedule in the history of the NHL during the regular season. And here we are again. The Bruins are doing it again, right? They're getting some easy wins because they're a good team and they're ready to play. And so I thought, geez, why don't we see if we can put together a few things on the show today of some easy wins that people can do in personal finance to get those easy wins.
I love it. Easy wins are great. You'll take them any day of the week. So we'll dive into that today on the show. Again, if you have any questions for Tim, we'd love to hear from you. You can always give them a call, 858-459-3937, or log on, dyerwm.com. All right, let's start with cash, Tim. Keeping the right amount in cash. So what's the small step here just to make sure we have the right amount of cash in our account?
Well, cash has been a big topic this year in 2023 because it actually pays you some interest now, as opposed to, there used to be a few zeros after the decimal point, 0.001 interest. Now it's you can actually get a reasonable rate of return somewhere in the 5% range on cash. So cash is an asset class and it's becoming more interesting. But when we talk about holding the right amount of cash, there's really a few goals that this solves. One, we know that we need to have some liquid funds around if we have an emergency, an unforeseen expense, things like handling the loss of a job or income. I know that some of the people we work with, they do a lot of things on the internet from a business perspective. And Google or Facebook or some of these platforms, they change their algorithm, and that might shut the door on their income right away. So, okay, planning for the rainy day, keeping the right amount of cash. But there's another reason, too. And I like to look at it as opportunity, right? Having some dry powder to take advantage of opportunities, because there's always another train leaving the station, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, we've got plenty of deals and opportunities that come across our desk, and our job is to sort of vet through those to get down to something that our clients can work with. But I think the big takeaway is that it isn't all, just having that emergency fund, that safety, release if something unforeseen happens. Also having cash around to take care of opportunities. I think that's an easy win. Now, everybody's in different situations, and in some cases, cash and cash flow is tight. But I want people to think about something here a little bit. Again, while we're talking about the topic of cash, because let's say you make some sacrifices and you actually build up that cash reserve a little bit, right? And you make some sacrifices, maybe you shorten a vacation you had planned or cut back, and the next car you get maybe isn't as fancy or expensive. I mean, it could be a myriad of things. But now that you have that cash built up, right, that war chest as we call it, think about what that allows you to do. Maybe it allows you to invest, I'll use the term more aggressively, but maybe more growth oriented, mm-hmm. because the ups and downs of the market are less impactful for you because you have that money saved for a rainy day. Looking at it another way, when it comes to people's investments, we always like to see people have you know, in safe liquid reserves 1 to 2 years, and that isn't emergency funds. That's the amount needed if their stock portfolio, for example, declines in value or we have a recession or something. It gives them that bandwidth to weather that storm. And because they have that means to weather that storm, they're not forced to liquidate those assets when they're down in value. Okay?
Yeah.
And if they don't have to liquidate those assets when they're down in value for either a known or an unknown expense, they can let those things play out, which can help them earn those returns that the market delivers over, you know, longer periods of time. There's a lot of uncertainty on a year-by-year basis, but those numbers smooth out, and they become very powerful over a 5 or 7 year market cycle. So I guess I'm hammering on the point here, but there's a lot of power in having safe money, and to simplify, it allows you to take risks with some of that other money that you may not have thought about because there's money there to weather the storm.
Yeah, no question. Having the right amount of cash is so very important. All right, what about those old insurance policies? I know a lot of people will utilize these earlier in their working careers. They're starting a family, right, to cover income and those needs. But what else could you be doing with these old insurance policies?
Yeah, this is a I'd love a blanket answer, but for everybody it's unique because people are exposed to different types of insurance at different milestones along the way. As everybody knows, I've got 2 young boys. If I get hit by the proverbial bus, I've got some, you know, term insurance that covers that. And what my future income would be coming in for their support, you know, if that's not around because I've been hit by a bus, the term insurance pays the difference, right? People have insurance that they get through their work, the benefits through their company plans. You know, maybe you've got a whole life or a permanent life insurance policy that you've been saving in that has some cash value. It always makes sense to get a review on those. And one of the things that you can do for a quick win is you request what's called an in-force ledger. And kind of a jargony type term, so we'll put that in the penalty box. But what that means is you can call your insurance company and they'll essentially give you a summary of what is going on with your insurance policy. Now, I'm not saying that the output is something that everybody can just sort of look at and understand completely. I mean, it still is, it can be difficult in some cases, but getting that in-force ledger and finding out where you are, what the terms are, revisiting, you know, what the objectives were for that. In some cases, you may be able to, you know, either look at other options that are cheaper or make some changes within the policy to get more benefits. There's a variety of different branches or things, you know, opportunities that branch off from that. But make a list if you have those and start taking a look at them this year and just find out where they're at and what they're about.
Well, you talk about old accounts. Let's talk about those old 401ks you might have from a past job, right? You probably just left it there thinking, well, I'll just let it grow and I'll touch it when it comes time. But you can probably take those old 401ks and put them to better use, right?
Yeah, I see this one a lot, right? The days of working at General Motors or General Electric for 40 years, getting a gold watch and off you go with the pension are gone, right? We move around. People change jobs a lot as different opportunities or just even career changes. But because of that, each company maybe has a 401k or maybe a 403b, or if you're in the government space, that might be something known as a 457. They're all retirement plans. Now, with that in mind, you have an option of rolling those funds, those assets or those funds over into your own personal IRA. The reason people do that is they're no longer at the company. It's hard to keep track of what's happening there. It's gotten better as companies' websites, you know, you can access that information. But here's the thing. Inside an old 401k plan, you've got a menu of choices. We usually call that the core account. And there's maybe 15 or 20 mutual funds, and they're vetted by a board or a group of fiduciaries, and they're really supposed to be kind of vanilla that apply across a wide range of investors. And you know, it's a good place to start. A better place to start would be to open up an IRA and move those assets to index funds, You're going to lower your costs, diversify, and potentially improve your return. So, but the, you know, the other thing is you can start to invest in things that you're familiar with. I always joke around, like, look, until I can get a parking spot in the front row in a Home Depot, I'm going to own that stock, right? Doesn't matter what day it is, I'm always like a mile away. But, you know, you can invest in companies that you know. Maybe it's Apple or Amazon or Home Depot or, you know, Goldman Sachs or something of that nature. And there's just more opportunities. Now, with more opportunities may come more complexity, right? If you don't know which funds to choose out of the 15 mutual funds in your 401k plan, then looking through ultimately an infinite number of options within your IRA could be daunting. That's where you might want to check in with a financial professional. Somebody that you're using can easily help you with that. You know, for our clients, we run some proposals and scenarios of some options that they have. And in a lot of cases, more than not, we can lower the fees because the index funds have lower management expenses. And, you know, by creating that optimal asset allocation, which is that diversification part of the plan, a lot of times we can improve the return, potentially improve the return and reduce the risk. So those are all things that we're looking at. Easy win. Remind yourself if you've got an old 401k out there to consider rolling that into an IRA where you can invest in many more options to help you kind of build up that nest egg faster.
All right, talking about some small steps, some small wins that can have a big impact on your future. Let's talk about some investment stuff next. What about those accounts that you have that are managed? You know, we talk about getting value and getting making sure the expenses you're paying, the fees that you're paying, are worth it. So, in this case, Tim, should you maybe reconsider what you're spending in those managed accounts, what you're getting out of them?
Yeah. So, price becomes an issue in the absence of value, right? The old kind of adage, and it's true, right? If you pay a dollar for something and you get 90 cents back versus paying $5 for something and you get $10 back, right? The dollar option is cheaper, right? Or I don't even say 90 cents back. You put in a dollar, you get $2. Here's the point I've tried to make. You want to make sure that you're getting value from your manager. Now, the mistake that a lot of people come up against, or I don't even want to say make, but they assume that the person that is doing the money management for them is, you know, providing services outside just the investment management part. And let me explain that. Everybody knows Fisher Investments. You know, they're one of the biggest investment managers out there. They got commercials all over the place. He hates annuities, whatever, you know, things that remind you, get stuff in the mail from them all the time. Now, you know, Fisher, they will manage a portfolio for you, but they're not going to look at your tax return. They're not going to look at, you know, your we just talked about insurance, you know, your insurance policies and things like that, or do you have the right amount of cash? They're just saying, okay, you give us the money. Do you want us to run this conservative, middle of the road, or balanced, as they might call it, or aggressive, you know, different variations of that. So I mention that because investment management is different than wealth management. Investment management is a component of wealth management, but they are not the same, right? Investment management is the investment part of the complete picture, whereas wealth management includes investment management, but then you add in planning, tax, estate, legacy, those types of things, all under the same roof. So reconsider what you're paying, because a lot of times asset managers are charging what a wealth manager would charge, and they're delivering, you know, wealth manager is delivering a lot more value in a lot of cases. So you want to check that out as well.
Yeah, kind of along the same lines, we talk about these small steps. What about those mutual funds that have a high expense attached to them? And you might not even realize that you have these in many cases, but you definitely want to look into what you have or what you're invested in.
Ben, nobody has mutual funds anymore. Come on, it was like so 1990s. No, that is not true. The mutual fund industry is still massive, mostly through the retirement planning space, like all the 401ks that have, you know, billions of dollars in these different funds. But look, I'll just say first and foremost, if you have mutual funds, that's good, right? That's a good starting point. But there's better and there's best. And I would argue that, and this is Tim Dyer's opinion, but I would argue that if you have mutual funds, you could probably shift those. You got to take into account taxes and things, but you could probably shift those into index funds and move from good, you know, to better. And if the situation's right and it's right for you, you could move to stocks, which don't have any expenses, right? So good, better, best. Maybe good is right for you. Maybe using index funds that have a lower internal annual, what they call an internal expense, maybe that's better. Or maybe having a stock portfolio put together for you that has zero internal expense is best for you. So if you have mutual funds, the first stop here, the first quick win is you can go to yahoo.com or Google or something and just type in the ticker symbol of that mutual fund. You'll find out what that expense ratio is. If it's more than 1%, you know, you got to put an asterisk next to that and have a conversation around that. If it's more than 0.5%, you know, you might be better off going to index fund, but you're still getting on the lower side of things. I've seen them as high as, you know, 2% in some cases, but most index funds are in that kind of 10 to 30 basis points. For our viewers that don't know what a basis point is, 1% is 100 basis points. Okay. So if you were 0.5%, we call that 50 basis points. If you were 10 basis points, that's 0.1%. So when you get these index funds, you're getting down there in that 3 to 10 basis points area. It's a fraction of a cost of what a mutual fund is, and they do the same, if not more. So that's what I have to say about those high expense mutual funds.
Well, so 90s, but you know, hey, maybe we'll get rid of some of them and move on to something new. Maybe that's the small step you can take potentially. What about the tax efficiency of your investments, Tim? This is always something I know that you want to be checking all the time, but taking that step now can pay you huge dividends potentially.
It's not what you make, it's what you keep. I say this all the time, and clients say it back to me too. You know, right, Tim, it's not what we make, it's what we keep. So let's make smart, tax-efficient decisions. Now, if we're talking in a retirement account, the decisions in there have less tax impact because, as we know, those are tax-deferred. We don't pay taxes on transaction and retirement accounts until we take the money out of those accounts in the future, hopefully, preferably after age 59 and a half, so there's no 10% penalty. But look, if you own stocks, if you own crypto, if you own things like that in just a regular brokerage account, or maybe we call them an individual or a joint account, you know, the decisions that you make in there are going to have tax impact or ramifications. And one of the big mistakes that we see is people have a lot of their fixed income or their income-paying investments in their taxable accounts. And I would argue it might make sense in some circumstances to put those assets in your retirement accounts because that income that gets kicked off isn't taxed, right? And then if you move those growth investments into your taxable account, if you don't sell the stock or the index fund, you don't have any tax. So if you hold it for more than a year, you'll pay capital gains tax, which is historically, or for most people, I will say, capital gains tax is a lower tax rate than ordinary income tax. There aren't a lot of people in the 10% tax bracket that own a lot of, you know, stocks, for example, because they're either starting out or they're low income. That's okay. But understanding, you know, the tax nature of your accounts is paramount. And we've done other shows on that where we talk about the three types of money: tax now, tax later, and tax never, right? And that's taxable accounts, retirement accounts, and then Roth accounts for that tax never. So you want to get a quick win, take a look at your tax account. Here we're coming to the end of 2023. Does it make sense to sell some losers maybe that are in the portfolio to offset some of the winners and reduce the taxable nature of those winners? If you have losses that are greater than your gains, you can use that money to offset your income. So, and that's up to $3,000. So if you had you bought a stock and you made $10,000 on it, and you had another stock that you lost $15,000 on, you'd have a $5,000 net loss for the year And if you had a $100,000 a year salary, you could take $3,000 off the top there. So you'd be at $97,000 because of that tax saving. Now that remaining $2,000 from that $5,000 of net loss, that money is going to carry forward. It's called a tax loss carry forward. And you can use it in the next year or the years beyond. So it's important to make sure that that's reflected correctly on your tax return. That's something that we check for our clients to make sure that that number is accurate so that you can take that loss in the future if you have it. So,
yeah,
you know, those really are the some of the quick wins that, you know what, I'll add one more because we're just doing our client meetings now, our year-end strategy sessions. And one of the things that we do is we do something called a beneficiary designation checkup. And we're looking at all the accounts. We're reminding clients of who their beneficiaries are and what the percentages are if something, the percentages are if something happens. And in some cases, clients have brought over accounts and they don't have a beneficiary on them. And we make sure that that gets updated. Or, and this happened to me. I mean, before I was married, I think I had my sister as my beneficiary and my little IRA accounts, if you will. They're a little bit bigger now, and they're also, I'm married, right? So, you know, anyways. So I went through that exercise myself as well and just looked at all the accounts. Oh, need to clean that one up. And I had one son. I added him as a contingent beneficiary, which is like a secondary beneficiary if my wife wasn't available or around. And then we had a second son. So I got to, you know, I got to go in there and add him in there too. So it's always changing, getting a beneficiary view. That's something that you can do, log into your accounts online, whether Schwab, Fidelity, E-Trade, Vanguard, whatever you are, and you should be able to see what the beneficiaries are in your account. Make sure that those are updated, the percentages are correct, and then you can move on to the next thing. It's an easy win, and it's important. And yeah, you can just do it once, check it off. Heck, after you listen to this, just log into your account and do it there. But it's important. So those are the things, Ben, that kind of come to mind, ways we can get some quick wins and get you ready here for the new year.
Yeah, I think that's perfect, too, as we close out the year. This kind of it probably is perfect into the new year. If you're looking for new goals, right, looking to change habits, this is kind of a good list to kind of start with. I know you work on these things all the time with the clients that you work with. You're consistently going through these items. But for those that don't maybe have somebody to work with, that's a good starting point. But these are things you should be doing consistently.
Yes. Yes, they are. We actually have a 37-point checklist. I still call it that. I think we're up to like 60 now. But, you know, 37-point checklist where we go through, you know, all these things with clients, with the accounts. And it varies, the different things. It's not just beneficiaries. You know, are they getting their dividend checks paid out correctly? Are they? And, you know, the list goes on and on. But we're always combing through that to make sure. And we've got systems in place that make sure the clients are getting, they got a second set of eyes on these things because people are busy with their lives and doing what they do for a living. And there's just some easy wins that, again, your advisor or an advisor you work with, or we can help you with that. But I always like to, you know what you don't know and then have somebody getting a second set of eyes on it to make sure you're taken care of and then move on with your day.
Yeah, this is important. Well, if you have questions for Tim, give him a call, 858-459-3937. Want to go through any of these items that we've gone through today or just want to begin that planning process for yourself. That's a great place to start. And Tim, hopefully, you know, for the Bruins, they'll keep taking those small steps and picking up those easy wins all the way until the postseason rolls around once again.
Yeah, if you think your team can beat my Bruins, you know, send me a note. I'd love to chat about it. Maybe, but good clean fun out there. Anyways, yep, good chat, Ben, and we'll see you next week.
The commentary on this podcast reflects the personal opinions, viewpoints, and analyses of Sage Capital Advisors, LLC, DBA Dyer Wealth Management employees making such comment and should not be regarded as a description of advisory services provided by Dyer Wealth Management or performance returns of any Dyer Wealth Management Investments client. The views reflected in the commentary are subject to change at any time without notice. The opinions expressed in this podcast are for general informational purposes only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual or any specific security. It is only intended to provide education about the financial industry. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult your financial advisor prior to investing. Any past performance discussed during this program is no guarantee of future results. Any indices referred for comparison are unmanaged and cannot be invested into directly. As always, please remember investing involves risk and possible loss of principal capital. Please seek advice from a licensed professional. Dyer Wealth Management provides advisory services through Sage Capital Advisors, LLC, an SEC-registered investment advisor. Advisory services are only offered to clients or prospective clients where Dyer Wealth Management and its representatives are properly licensed or exempt from licensure. No advice may be rendered by Dyer Wealth Management unless a client service agreement is in place.